Hello everybody, Ewan Spence here, not giving you a smashing, crazy, weird opening because I'm still recovering from long amounts of travel, as are my co-hosts Rafe Blanford and Steve Litchfield. Welcome to the show. Hello Rafe.
Hello everybody.
And hello Steve.
Hello there, I'm chilled out in the sun.
You haven't been doing any travelling at all, have you?
I have. I've been all over the southeast of England with my family and relatives and having a jolly good time not working.
The joys of half-term week.
But more of that later. I've got a few observations about smartphone experiences out and about, but we'll come to that later if we've got time.
Indeed, yes. And the amount of travelling we'll be doing, I'm sure we're going to have that coming up in the stories we have as well. As usual, you're all about Symbian Insight podcast, a look back at the last week of what's been happening in the smartphone world with a focus on Symbian, but keeping our heads up and looking around at other areas of interest as and when they might occur. Let's carry on with the travelling theme very slightly. Rafe, I understand the dates have been announced for the Symbian Exium Imagination and Exhibition of Letter E things in 2010.
That's right. Symbian's annual trade show has been announced, or rather some web pages announcing the sort of dates have gone up initially. There hasn't actually been anything I've seen officially on the Symbian website, but given the amount of time these things take to set up in terms of pre-booking venues, I'm pretty sure we can say these are the concrete dates, and they're in Amsterdam on the 9th and the 10th of November this year. I believe this is the first time that the Symbian trade show has been anywhere other than London, so it looks like we'll be going on the road to attend that one.
No, I think the very first one was in the third one was in Barcelona back in 2002.
You may be right, but I think that one was cancelled in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, but I may be wrong. It's a long time ago.
Trivia fans. Wasn't this one supposed to be in Berlin, Ewan?
Yeah, but Eurovision's going to Berlin next year, so Symbian are wisely making sure that I don't have to go to the same city twice in a year.
Yeah, stay away.
Anyway, if you're wanting to correct any of the trivia that we mentioned on the show, as always, you could drop us an email at allaboutsymbian.com. Rafe, Steve, or Ewan will reach us. All right, new devices, the meat and drink to us. The Nokia E73 has hit America. Yet again, it's another one that's going for the T-Mobile stores. Following on from the rebranding of the 5230 to the Neuron, the E73 is going to be the move. I like this.
It's the mode, Ewan.
It's the mode. I'm loving the fact that they're using real names for them and getting away from the weird numbers. And actually, you're looking at the American market and go, what do we need to change slightly? This E73 is actually quite a smart move, I would say, Rafe.
Yes, I mean, this is really, for those that are wondering what it is, it's effectively an operator variant of the Nokia E72. There are a few cosmetic changes, both to the keyboard and the control cluster, but in terms of the internals, I think the only thing that will have changed are the 3G bands on the aerial to support T-Mobile's slightly wacky, I think it's 1700, 2100 megahertz 3G bands. But yes, I think this is an important step for Nokia to get one of their higher-end smartphones onto a US operator. The Neuron, good first step, but frankly, it was a low-end smartphone and perhaps wasn't going to catch the imagination of the US market. I don't think this is necessarily going to catch the imagination of the sort of power users necessarily, but I think it could do quite well on T-Mobile. If you look at where it's being positioned, it's actually going to be the thinnest QWERTY device on T-Mobile. And there are some other BlackBerry devices, for example, on T-Mobile. But the 9700 Bold, for example, comes in at $200 on a two-year contract, whereas this is going to be selling at $69.99 or $70 on a two-year contract. That actually means if you go through a third-party retailer like Amazon, you'll be able to get it for free. And for what's a pretty high-end handset in terms of its specifications, you know, Wi-Fi, GPS, 5-megapixel camera, that's not bad at all. Indeed, it's going to be competing really in terms of shop space and the price point with the old BlackBerry 8000 series, which I think it makes the E73 mode look rather attractive. It's also worth noting that T-Mobile have agreed to take some of Nokia's Ovi services. The two most notable of these are Ovi Store, obviously for downloading applications, and that's going to include integrated T-Mobile billing, so people won't have to use their credit card, they can just charge it to their phone bill, and Ovi Maps, and obviously the Ovi Maps comes with worldwide free pedestrian and car navigation, and it's sort of Nokia's vehicle for getting some of its location services onto the phone as well. I think altogether that provides quite a competitive package. App stores have become big in the States, so that's there if people want it. Maybe there's still some questions around the content, but I suspect the people this is going to be aimed at, and Nokia and T-Mobile were quite at pains to point out, this is sort of for the busy professional who instantly needs to switch between life mode and work mode, and they're playing off the sort of E-series switch mode feature, which I think many people will have seen on the devices before. But what that does is give you two customized home screen, one for work, one for home, or for whatever you choose those two to be. And does that call well on the American market? It's difficult to say at this point, but the press release used things like the busy mom and dad would be able to switch between work life and then home life to deal with children, and life work balance. And I think there's a pretty compelling message in there, even if it's not sort of a high end touchscreen devices. This is a good entry for Nokia, and I think they'll certainly be able to go on and build from here as some of the sort of devices come out in the future, thinking particularly towards the N8 and other Symbian 3 devices, and indeed the MeeGo devices. But this should give them a very solid basis to build off. And to my mind, it's the first device from Nokia on the US markets that's sort of competitive with what it will be going up against. The Neuron was there as well, but maybe a slightly different category. So it's a step forward, and it'll be interesting to see how it does. I think the only shame of it is that it's taken 8 months for this to come out and be available on the US market, behind the E72. But all in all, a pretty good job, I think.
And I think one of the things that we should be pointing out is it seems that Nokia finally found a US manufacturer that they can find a good relationship with. T-Mobile has presence in Europe and other areas as well. And these are all separate fiefdoms. This is T-Mobile USA. It's completely separate in terms of running and decisions and management to T-Mobile Europe. The fact that Nokia have been able to get down, get a device out there, get it to manufacturer specifications, still have the essential Nokia-ness, which isn't an actual word, I've looked it up, in that device through the Ovi windows. I'm interesting that the music store isn't there, but I'm sure that but America has huge problems with online music stores, as Spotify is finding out. I think that bodes well for Nokia. Yes, it's a long lead time, but it's a courtship that seems to now be bearing fruit, and it will be interesting to see how that develops over the next, say, 24 months.
Yeah, I mean, the only downside that you have to look at here is that T-Mobile is the smallest of the four big US carriers, but when you've only got two GSM carriers to deal with in the form of AT&T and T-Mobile, I think Nokia's options early on are quite limited. If they're able to find some success with T-Mobile, then I would imagine AT&T will come knocking, and sort of looking much further ahead, Verizon is sort of looking at LTE and coming onto those standards, and so it may be possible for Nokia to do something a little more there, but that's a while off.
And far better to have 10% of the small market than 100% of no market.
Yes, absolutely. You need to start somewhere. And as you say, the operators are... It's different in the US compared to Europe. I think the operators have a much bigger stranglehold over the market and a lot more of a say in what goes on. You see operator brand phones and a lot more customization going on, which has sort of been somewhat against what Nokia has been trying to do with its Ovi services. So as you say, having a part of a small market is better than no market at all. But I think a lot of people will be watching this one with interest. I suspect it's not going to be quite new enough to do anything really dramatic. We're going to have to wait for some of the later devices. I think I would identify MeeGo devices in particular as being what may end up cracking the US market for Nokia.
All right, then. Cracking other markets, of course, is the route to good business, and Nokia are continuing to look further afield into the developing countries. The C devices that have been announced last week, as this goes to air, not Series 60 devices, but an important plank in Nokia's strategy to get mindshare. And, of course, they also integrate with the Ovi services as well.
Yes, that's right. These C-series devices run, I think, a combination of Series 30 and Series 40, so they're not smartphones. But there's an interesting observation I'll share just at the end of this, just to give a very brief overview. The C1 and the C2 are dual SIM devices. They're the first dual SIM devices that Nokia produced. A lot of people will be wondering, why would you do that? Well, particularly in emerging markets, it's quite common to have more than one SIM card so that you can call your friends on their own network to get the cheapest possible call rates. Quite apart from reliability issues and other things like that, the C1 you can switch seamlessly by pressing a button. The C2, actually both SIM cards operate at the same time. There's also a couple of single SIM phones. It's the C1 C101 and the C102. They're all quite cheap. They range from 30 euros up to about 45 euros. Interestingly, everyone except for the C100 comes with a micro SD card slot, so that's music possibilities there. And three of them also support, as you mentioned, their year-end Ovi services in the form of messaging and Ovi Live tools. I think just my observation here would be that Nokia is one of the very few companies to sort of offer an entire portfolio on a truly global basis, which has a common brand and a common sort of visual and design identity. So the idea that Nokia can, you know, create a Nokia person for life is not one that should be underestimated. Obviously, the idea that people will upgrade throughout the phone series. I think clearly there's some sort of missing stuff at the high end, which we've discussed at length in previous podcasts. But going from the sort of low end to the mid tier and then beyond, there's certainly a strong message there. And, you know, while phone geeks are quite happy to switch all the time, there's an awful lot of loyalty to the brand, particularly in the emerging markets. There's a question about how much damage has been done by something like the N97, maybe in the developed markets. But I wouldn't overestimate that. I think people get too hung up on that sort of thing. And as I say, my final observation is just to say that the C2, say retailing about 45 euros, has pretty much identical specifications to the Nokia 7650. Indeed, the C2 is capable of video recording, which the 7650 wasn't out of the box. So it's rather a suggestion that boundaries and specifications are always on the move. So what's considered smart one day is a dumb phone the next day.
Oh, and I like the 7650. Right then, let's go from the bottom of the market and swoop right up to the top. Nokia's N8. It's still not here yet, but we're seeing more and more videos showing off the facilities, showing off what it can do. Interesting that these videos are building up a lot of buzz about the device, but are doing so in a closed environment, so Nokia can show you what's happening. It's not like they're handing it to a blogger, putting it in the hand, and they're going, well, it feels a little bit like a Weetabix. Steve, I mean, you've been following these videos quite closely. Is this a smart PR move, or does it just smack of Nokia just putting stuff up to go, look at us, it's not here yet, keep looking?
Well, there are two different sorts of video you're talking about here. There's that Nokia have just started leaking up the first of three official videos, with one of the N8 product managers is giving a demo of the basic features. And that's been rather frustrating, in that, to my mind, he's been tiny bit staid, not really showing anything terribly revolutionary. To my mind, most of the N8's unique selling points haven't even been touched on yet. And if Nokia, if you're listening, fire your script writer, get me to write the script, or even better, I'll do the filming as well, and I'll do it free of charge. But there surely has
don't say that. Rafe, did you hear that?
Oh, dear.
Surely there has to be better and more exciting ways of demonstrating this, you know, this really high-end, accelerated, camera-centric, top-end Symbian 3 smartphone for the masses at a low price. There are so many exciting things to talk about in the N8, and these initial videos from Nokia are just so understated and staid and not very, rather boring, if I may. There's a different sort of video out there at the moment, though. There have been all sorts of people with the inevitable prototypes who have been sort of released onto the blogosphere demonstrating, for example, low-light video, concert video, doing photo galleries, playing with some of the prototype firmware software and putting that on video, all rather Mr. Blurry Cam, if you ask me, and all rather very unofficial. Nokia needs to understand that these unofficial amateurish videos are out there, and while they're raising a bit of buzz, they're not really raising the level of buzz that Nokia themselves could achieve if they really put their minds to it. And I know that Nokia listened to this podcast, and we've been pleading with them to, for us and other major Symbian blogs and Nokia blogs, to have access to the prototype firmware with the understanding that we're not going to hack it to bits. We know it's a prototype. We know the firmware is not completely finished yet, but let's build the buzz in a constructive way. Let's build the buzz in a way that actually gets things buzzing, rather than people thinking, well, it doesn't look much different to my old 5800.
Which is a bit of a danger. Although I have to say, 5800, still a great phone, still stylish and still looks good.
Absolutely, and it's only 150 quid, whereas the N8 is, 2 years on and two or three times the price, and ostensibly much newer. So people need to see why it's different, in my opinion.
I think it's interesting that you say that, Steve. I think the problem with the N8 is there are so many different messages that could be used to communicate about it, and there's always going to be an element of frustration when the information which it is at the moment is relatively limited. And I do find myself looking at various videos and thinking, oh, I'd like them to mention that, or I'd like them to mention this. But I have to sort of step back and say, well, you know, which person are they hoping to address with this video? But certainly, yes, I'm keen to get my hands on it. Incidentally, the reason that Nokia aren't doing this is they're, I think, quite keen with the idea of making sure they have a finished product before they officially start showing it to people. But, of course, in this internet age and the fact there are now prototypes with operators, developers and things like that, it's very difficult to say, no, you can't do anything at all, because it is now a public device. And therefore, you know, trying to stop all the gaps, if you like, is a bit like, you know, trying to wrestle a spaghetti monster or something like that. So it's rather frustrating in one point of view, but I can understand why they're doing it as well.
Right, then, obviously the N8 story is going to continue, so let's not take too much time on that today. One story that might be lurking in the future is the problem that networks are going to have with bandwidth and capacity. More and more smartphones eating up more and more data, more and more smart devices. You know, I've been sitting when I've been over in Norway with the Nokia CS10 internet stick. It's just a USB dongle for my laptop. But more data is going out over networks as it is. And the unlimited data plan looks to be on the endangered list. AT&T in America have basically pulled it. Yes, you can stay on it if you're already on it, but they're now saying you can either have a 200 meg plan or a 2 gig plan, and then you can start paying overage fees. I wonder how much this is going to impact on devices, because these devices, every device is labeled up as being always connected and always on. Yet, I think that we're, you know, in the next year, there's going to be even almost like brownouts of data. We see it at events such as South by Southwest. And I wonder if, you know, the idyllic days are over. I know it's quite contrary and quite controversial, but any thoughts on that, anyone?
I think this is a bit of a non-story myself. I mean, AT&T are saying no longer unlimited data. It wasn't unlimited in the first place. What they want to stop is sort of the edge case users who were hammering the networks and taking a massive amount of resources who they're never going to make money off. And most people, this really won't have an impact on. We're talking about probably 0.05% of, you know, AT&T's customer base that are really going to feel that they're being hard done by this. Yes, you know, costs may go up for some people, but the vast majority of people are actually going to end up paying less for their data costs. And I think that's probably going to be true elsewhere. And I would expect, you know, to see a move away from the idea of unlimited data. And they'll sort of, in most places, you actually have a fair use cap anyway. And I think that might become sort of more prominent in some of the messaging. In terms of sort of the data crunch, yes, this is something that people have been talking about for a long time. The networks don't have the capacity to do everything. And, you know, there's going to be attempts to offload this on Wi-Fi, so I'd expect sort of increase in femtocells. That's things like the Vodafone short signal in the UK, but there's also similar brands from Verizon and AT&T in the States, I believe. And I think we'll see a lot more of those, and just generally trying to get onto Wi-Fi networks in general. And some operators are having their own Wi-Fi sort of channels, if you like, for doing that. But part of me also says, I think that's about efficiently managing the data and being, you know, giving users reasonable expectations. The idea that you're going to be able to stream or deliver HD video over a cellular network just doesn't really fly. And I think most people aren't that interested in doing that straight away. You know, a lot of it's for the sake of it, for the edge case or the power users. And other people want things that just work properly. I mean, maybe I'm too pessimistic on this, but I largely think that a lot of these problems will be solved, because they have to be, and it's probably going to end up annoying a lot of power users because it will limit them in what they can do. But for 95% of people, they probably Absolutely. Won't notice any difference whatsoever.
Absolutely, yes. I was going to, you've just been voicing what I've been thinking. There's no way that there's sort of power users doing, swallowing gigabyte after gigabyte after gigabyte and bragging about the fact, can carry on doing it in a world where if everyone did that, the entire network would just grind to a halt in a few seconds flat. There has to be some sort of cap. There has to be some sort of realistic limit on the amount of data that's flying around our 2G and 3G and even 4G networks. There has to be some limit. Now, these limits, yes, of course data should be cheaper. Of course data plans should be simpler, etc., etc. But they shouldn't be unlimited, because people with unlimited data will misuse them. And just like people misusing landline broadband connections, everyone suffers when some people abuse it. And yes, you may say, well, I'm not abusing it, I'm simply using mobile data as God intended by streaming, as you say, streaming videos. But that shouldn't be done over cellular data. Cellular data should be for accessing information and email and instant messaging and social networks and all the other things which you really need to be online for, which you don't need to swallow huge amounts of data. If you want to grab huge amounts of data, you know, grabbing podcasts and streaming video, you hook up via Wi-Fi, exactly as you said. So I 100% agree with you, Rafe.
And it's also interesting, when I was doing the test back in March of going around America, of just how little data, in essence, you actually use. I mean, I think I was going in total for the trip, I used about 40 megabytes, and 10 of that was because I decided to do a bit of tethering in the last half an hour at the airport. So in terms of how much data you actually use, go and check your data center. I mean, the Symbian phones will give you your last 30 days of data that you've transferred. iPhones will do it for all time. Find out how much you actually use before you're going, oh, I can't live without unlimited data. I got 500 megabyte from Orange every month. I barely hit 40 around the UK and in Edinburgh, because most of the heavy lifting is done through sideloading through the PC, through a proper connection, which is cabled up and everything. So, you know, let's have a look at evidence before you make a supposition, is all that I'm saying here. The data crunch may happen unless people are sensible. My, that sounds like I've turned into the Green Party.
Yes, no, I think that's exactly right. And as we've already mentioned, so offloading the data onto things like Wi-Fi networks. I think the other factor to consider here is actually the vast majority of the problems for this kind of data issue are coming from tethering and from sort of 3G dongles. They actually make up the vast majority of data on the networks at the moment. And clearly there is a demand for that kind of thing, and people want to be able to do it, you know, connecting laptops all the time and, you know, saying no to video altogether isn't the right approach. But perhaps there's, you know, it's controversial to say this, particularly on mobile, is we may have to have more shaping of traffic, and indeed a lot of that already goes on networks. People aren't aware of it, and the idea of net neutrality on mobile is more difficult to swallow simply because the costs of moving data around are much higher. So people either need to be prepared to pay for it, and I'm sure there are people out there who say, fine, I'm willing to pay a premium if it means I can have as much data as I want anytime I like. But for most people, it's sort of not something that's a necessity to have, you know, gigabytes, as we say, of data. It's a sensitive issue, of course, and I think it'd be interesting to get some feedback from people on what others think of it, what they think of it. But to my mind here, this is really just a relatively simple business argument from the point of view of the operators, in that people are going to have to pay for what they use. And other than that, that's kind of, you know, fair to say. If you're using it, you pay for it.
Yeah, I noticed that in America, I've listened to several American cellular podcasts, and that they're always talking about, well, if you want tethering, you have to pay an extra, whatever it is, $15 a month. And there's a very distinct distinction on many, many platforms and many carriers that if you want to tether and use a desktop-class computer with a cellular connection, then you pay extra for it. Are you helping to fund that bandwidth? And I think that's a model, funnily enough, it's one of the first time that an American model makes its way over here successfully. But I think that sort of thing will have to happen in other markets as well.
I think Jerry Hall managed quite well when she came over, but I think that's a different type of model. Right then, thank you very much. Lots of forward-looking stuff here. I love this next one, by the way. The bike charger from Nokia, which is due to arrive at the end of the year. Allegedly for the developing markets. Essentially, it's like the old dynamo that you put on your bike, you push down and the little wheel rubs against the big back wheel and it creates power. Normally, it was used to put your lights on your bike when you're travelling home late at night from going up the hill after listening to Dvorak's Ninth Symphony. But now it's going to be used for charging your mobile phone. What a fantastic idea!
Yes, I'm a big fan of this idea. I think it's a really clever idea as an accessory. Just to give you some extra details, you need to be going at least 6 kilometres per hour in order to be able to charge it, and you need to be cycling at 12 kilometres per hour to get the equivalent efficiency to an AE3 charger, which isn't actually all that fast. If you start going more than 50 kilometres an hour, which I can't see a lot of people doing on a bike, it will stop working.
Is that 5-0?
5-0 indeed, yes. So unless you're going down a particularly steep hill or your name's Lance Armstrong, I can't really see that happening. It's going to be about £15 in the emerging markets. It will obviously be more expensive, you know, in Western markets. I think Nokia see this as very much a kind of a social good. You know, Ewan said it's for emerging markets, and it really is. There's a rather serious point to be made here. in a lot of markets where Nokia sells phone, the electricity supply is by no means guaranteed. And for most people listening to this podcast, the idea that your electricity supply is sort of very intermittent or may not work for a week at a time, at its most severest, I mean, usually we're looking at working for a couple of hours a day, is a complete something they aren't able to get their head round. And so the idea of being able to charge your phone via a bike is actually really quite significant. What you'll see if you go and look at some of Nokia's anthropological research, particularly by Jan Chipchase, who's now left the company, is they've been investigating how charging works in some of the emerging markets, and they've seen things like street vendors offering the charging of mobile phones off car batteries. And I think this is accessory kind of plays into that. Of course, there's also a green angle into this in that it's renewable and sustainable energy, so it's good from that point of view. But, you know, think about this, you know, seriously, and this is why Nokia have done C-Series that we talked about earlier with 6 weeks of standby time in their battery. An accessory like this could be the difference between the chance to make a phone call or the absolute guarantee of being able to make a phone call. There's even some suggestions that you could sort of set up a micro business based on using a bike to charge mobile phones. You know, you could put it on runners and convert most of the energy into charging up mobile phones. And so I think it's a timely reminder that mobile as a sort of force for social change will be most profound in the emerging markets. And it's sort of quite humbling in some ways to think about that kind of thing. But yes, I'd also say as someone who wants to put this on their bike, I would certainly like to see this accessory come out in Western markets as well.
It also highlights something else that's really useful about Symbian devices as such, which is they're designed to be standalone. If you pick up let's pick up an iPhone, for example, you can't edit your playlists, you can't load up music or MP3s onto that without having another laptop. Even if you buy the iPad, you need to literally tether it up for a partnership. Pick up your standard Symbian phone, even the basic ones, the C ones, or, you know, something like the 5230. Everything is in there. You have email, you have web, you can download, you can sideload, you can zip, you can read archives, you can convert. Everything is in the handset. It doesn't need another computer. You're not tied into this desktop metaphor that we are in Western civilization, which is why you now need a bike, a phone, and this little dynamo thing. You are absolutely sorted. Okay, you still need to be inside coverage, but even then, you can still use it as a standalone computer. You can still read, compose, write, take pictures, listen to your music, watch video. I think sometimes we lose sight of just how standalone Symbian can be. All smartphones are standalone to a certain extent, but I would be quite happy living on just a Symbian device for a month or two. I mean, there were some things I knew I wouldn't be able to do, but it could certainly do a lot more than, say, you would take an Android device or an iPhone and use just that for a month. And I just think that that's an important point that we sometimes gloss over when we're looking at the latest downloaded application or, you know, over-the-air cloud application to sync up our music. And moving on from that world to another world, the world of Finland. Now, Rafe, while I was away in Norway, you flew right over me to Finland, I understand.
That's right. We talked about this on last week's podcast of the day one, and I thought it would be a good opportunity just to talk a little bit about day two. There's going to be some stuff going up on the site around this, a couple of videos and some text articles as well. But just to give you a flavour, the second day was spent NRC and Finnish University Demo Day. It was run in conjunction with an organisation called Demola, which seeks to sort of create research and development stroke innovation partnerships between big companies and sort of local universities to set up research projects. And again, it's applying to the open innovation that we talked about last week. But I'm sure what people are probably most interested in hearing about are what are some of the NRC demos that were on display. So just to give you a couple of examples, a lot of them were, interestingly enough, kind of around image and video browsing. How do you make that more attractive when you've got hundreds or thousands of images and videos on the phone? How do you make it more controllable, both from the local point of view, and then how do you make it more accessible to go out onto the cloud, onto the web, and find out even more images? So one that I'm going to pick up was called MAR. And this was called See Through the Earth, and it was actually demonstrated on an N900, but it could equally apply to any phone. And the idea was this was using a kind of augmented reality approach, you could look through the earth and see all the images and videos in a particular place. But in contrast to sort of ordinary augmented reality, which tends to be fixed to the place you're in, this was sort of point your phone at the ground and you will see through the earth, you know, say from the UK to Australia, and there you will see all the photos of Australia or particular areas in Australia. And I thought it was rather an interesting way of exploring sort of photos, and it could be used both on local content but also for stuff on Flickr or managed in any other way. It's quite difficult to describe just by talking about it, so check out the video that we'll have on that in due course. Staying with images, there was also a kind of upgraded version of Image Exchange, which is available in beta labs at the moment, but this included a client for being able to look at things on the phone. Again, this was about sort of being able to drive yourself around a map and see images in their context, and it's not just about the location, it's also the way that you are pointing, and so it can orientate images in space, and potentially when you combine that with 3D models, it gets very interesting. Again, it's a way of looking at sort of local content, but also potentially content from Flickr or other geotagged services as well. In one sense, I would describe this as geotagging plus, because as I say, it uses the other sensors as well and puts it in a 3D model, so you really do get an idea of the, you know, pictures that you were taking. And I think this is what we'll probably see the idea of viewing your photo collections on a map evolve towards, because looking at photos on a 2D map is rather doesn't make sense when you actually took them in a 3D environment. And although obviously you're not going to get a 3D real 3D environment on the phone, you can create one through sort of the right angles and things like that, and have a sort of innovative way of looking at the photos. I'm a little bit sceptical, because I wonder how much people will really do this as opposed to sort of flicking through photo albums, but certainly some very potential interesting ideas. And that's really what the NRC is about. You know, it's not necessarily things that will go straight into a commercial product. It's about exploring new ways that you can do things. Also of interest in that respect was something called Nokia Instant Community. And this was a way of creating sort of instant social networks and being able to connect with people and local communities around you. It doesn't need anything like an internet connection. It's actually based on ad hoc Wi-Fi. And it's the idea of if you have this service or this application installed, you can create an instant community around any space. Now, that might be a university, but it could also be a concert or a conference that you're attending. So think about a conference that you're attending that immediately creates its sort of own social network merely by switching on the phone. You're then able to sort of share images and documents within that space. There's sort of community rooms in which you can go and chat, sort of exchange ideas. And you know, thinking about things that happen at tech conferences in terms of things like the IRC back channel, you know, imagine that mediated merely through mobile devices that can just appear ad hoc, with users rather in control, being able to share exactly what they want. And in one sense, you might say it's a recipe for anarchy. But I also think, you know, it is a potentially a way for these kind of things to form without any, you know, above structure being formed, which is always the problem at these conferences with kind of networking sites or IRC back channels. They can either, you know, not get the necessary adoption or be very limited in the sort of cliques that end up on the IRC back channel versus people in the real conference. Clearly there's going to be the same problem for this kind of a thing, but really this demo was about doing that kind of community creation, social community creation around specific events or groups of people with the minimal possible overhead. And I actually thought, I can see this one having a lot of potential. You know, the idea that you could be sitting in a football stadium watching a match, and a sort of ad hoc social network just for that football match could be created with people sharing back and forth ideas. You know, what's your opinion on a certain player, replays of certain goals, you know, maybe pictures from the other side of the stadium. It's quite difficult, obviously, with these kind of things to really envisage the concept, because a lot of the time the best ideas aren't thought of until they're actually implemented in the real world. But in this demo, one of the things they were showing off is how it'd been used to sort of enhance sort of communication within a sort of a university context, both in terms of lectures and afterwards as well, creating much stronger social ties within a certain university class. And so I think that has a lot of potential. I could go on and on with these demos because I did see an awful lot of them. Everything from sort of eye tracking and mind tracking to being able to control games to sort of the latest in haptics in the way that you may be able to squeeze a phone to get haptic feedback or to, you know, provide input mechanisms or maybe using faces and different expressions to control what your phone does. So this is the idea that you can maybe wink at your phone and it will answer a phone call or go to the next page. Obviously, there's, I think, some social awareness around this of will people feel a bit stupid doing this. But as I say, this is all kind of very pure research and thinking about ways that you can interact with your device beyond what we do today. And clearly, that kind of input with a device and to a certain extent the output are the limitations on mobile. A lot of that's to do with size, but also sort of social acceptability. And think about ways in which devices might be able to communicate extra information. You know, when we talk about haptics, that's really just, at the moment, it's really around a buzz when you press a key or maybe the vibrate function when there's an incoming call. But would you be able to sort of vary those kind of vibrations to, you know, extra information? So the idea of sort of custom buzzing on a certain caller coming in, or, you know, one side of the phone indicates something and another side indicates something else. And even down to things like, you know, picking up a phone and maybe getting a small electrical shock to indicate that, you know, you've got an urgent call that you've missed. There's all kinds of sort of areas to be explored there. And that was some of the things that came out of NRC. You know, it was also the things like smart houses, sort of everything from multimodal affective conversational agents, which bypassed me, but was basically an idea of you know, how you can use facial and body gestures on a TV screen to communicate extra information. So I said earlier, the gaze interaction for games, all sorts of interesting bits and pieces. I suspect I'm not really able to do it justice on a podcast, so please check out some of the videos that will come have on the site in the next few weeks or so.
There we go there. Thank you for that. Obviously, lots happening, and some of this will actually come down to be stuff on the ground and the devices. Things like, you know, you turn your phone over in the morning for it to silence the alarm. I love that feature. Some of it will just stay out there is weird and wacky, like multiple screens folding out and rolling off from the back. We've all seen those ideas rise and fall in times, but at the end of it, the market will choose stuff that works for them. And it's great that you have all the experimentation. I'm also guessing, Rafe, that there were one or two things that you saw that you're not allowed to talk about yet.
No, this was all public information. So everything can be talked about. And as I say, there was an awful lot to see. doing it justice is difficult. You know,
in that case, one question. What was the wackiest, weirdest thing you saw?
Ooh, that's that's incredibly difficult. It wasn't particularly wacky, but one that certainly caught my eye were the virtual instruments, and this was kind of using gestures and movements and the sensors on board phones to sort of create music in, you know, what seemed to me to be quite an organic way, and, you know, using devices, you know, mobile devices as content creation tools has been incredibly popular, and moving that into sort of audio creation I think has quite a lot of possibilities. And so I'm not saying Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, the next one, is going to be created on a mobile phone, but there's certainly potential to use kind of the sensors on phones for sort of atypical usages, and so in that sense that was a pretty wacky idea.
Fantastic. Steve, I know you weren't there, but what's the wackiest thing you'd like to see in a phone?
I would like to see Nokia bring back some of the features they've bought out for their budget phones. For example, LED flashlights into their higher-end phones. It's incredibly frustrating swanning around with the latest £400 Nokia smartphone and seeing some oik with a 20-quid job turn on his LED flashlight. I know the E63 had it in Nokia's recent lineup, but again, that's a budget phone. So Nokia, you know, bring back the ability to fire up that LED flash and so we can use it when we're going home from the pub in the dark.
And I still think that in all these business and enterprise phones that are coming out, that are going to businessmen, they're doing everything high-powered, the one thing we're missing is an integrated laser pointer. Every businessman wants one to play around with. You strap one of those underneath, and even when you get out to the nightclubs and the music series phones, have an array of lasers coming out of your phone just to light up the sky.
Wouldn't that be rather dangerous?
Oh, no, they would be quite low-powered ones. I mean,
I don't care. It still sounds dangerous.
Nothing wrong with a bit of danger in your life, as is witnessed every third week when I get to host the podcast. Right then, that is your All About Simian Insight podcast for the day. Lots of short, small stories all building up to create a wonderful ecosystem. Everything continues. Everything carries on moving forward. We will cover all of that at allaboutsimian.com on a daily basis. Thank you to Rafe Blanford and Steve Litch for joining me. Thank you, Rafe.
Thank you, everybody.
And thank you, Steve.
Yep, see you next time.
Thank you all out there for listening as well. Your comments are welcome. We're also in iTunes. You search for All About Symbian. We can't edit any of the reviews there or the star rating. So if you'd like to leave a genuine review on what you think of the show, go there and you know that none of that is anything to do with us, apart from the one that's labelled written by Steve. Ignore that one. For now, thank you all very much for listening and goodbye.